Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast. With me, Robin, joined by Martin.
Good evening. Good evening, one and all. And good evening to you too, Robin.
Oh, thank you, Martin. Thank
you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm happy to be here. Excited. Sad and tragic about Alex, though. I mean...
Not again.
The whale will never be the same, but...
I know.
Man versus nature, it's going to happen occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, the World Wildlife Federation are onto him. It's a recovery mission right now. He shouldn't have done what he did.
He really shouldn't have. It was a bad idea.
I'm devastated for both him and the whale. So that's that, really. I mean, we move on. We move on from this issue, and we wish Alex's family all the best. I guess, with dealing with the fallout from this, both the anger and, of course, the tragedy.
Yeah.
So, it's unlucky. Unlucky, Alex.
Yeah. Just hearing it made me blubber, but, you know.
Beautiful pun. Oh, wow. So, we have a fair few people in the chat on this Monday evening at, well, just gone 9 p.m. BST, which is where you can find us every Monday for this podcast. Hello to, well, lots of people. Hello to Andy Jones, who says hi. That's great. Hi. Hello, C.S. Drummerson. Hello, P. Greg. Hello, James Linton, and the rest of you. Welcome aboard on this fine Monday evening. Robin.
Yes.
Before we get started, when we do the whole shebang of what we learned this week, and of course, a riddle, and of course, our main topic. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. I'm excited to discuss what we're discussing today. I was a bit worried when I suggested it that we might be playing against the gods of YouTube with this choice of topic.
Oh yeah, we're mentioning the N word, and YouTube doesn't really like that. So of course, if you want to fund this podcast, which is most likely not going to be funded by ads, let's be honest, then you can of course join our Patreon page, where a lot of other people have actually joined. And I mean, last week we actually spoke about the benefits of sweat. So
we did.
I mean, if you're interested in that, then you can head on over. But of course, there's over 100 other episodes over on our Patreon, where we have a lot of lovely support. And I'd like to read out some names to provide some tribute to these some of them actually quite long-term supporters.
Yeah, thank you very much. People.
So I'd like to thank, not exclusively the following, but in particular the following. And that is Kurt Jones, Super Show Podcast, who actually had some pretty tragic news this week.
Yeah, that was actually quite sad.
We won't mention that because it's just making me upset.
Yeah.
Nicholas Dill, John Baker, Janie, Henny Raphael, Hey Hey Swanboat, Caleb Wilkerson, Ahmad, Rashad Najjar, Simon Workman, Marion Keldson, apologies, I'm so sorry if I mispronounced that, Marion. Josh Chomatek, Emmett Tapia, Denton Peasley, also known as Peaswad, A Filthy Casual, Tom Odin, and I believe I've possibly missed out a name or two there. But anyway, to you guys, if I missed anyone, I do apologise. And also, of course, our YouTube member, Captain Wonky.
Hey.
So thank you all of you for your continued support. It does mean a lot to us. It keeps the lights on. It pays for my voice to sound slightly less annoying than it would otherwise with this nice microphone. And it also pays for our trips as well, of which we have another episode coming out at some point from our trip to York. So, you know, hold on for that one. It should be a nice, I can't say a bumpy ride, but that doesn't make sense. It was fun. Well,
there were a few bumps in the night.
Nothing sexual, Robin.
Yeah, it wasn't a Wednesday.
No, it wasn't a Wednesday. Nope, Alex. Last Wednesday, he gave that whale his heart, and the very next day, he got caught by the World Wildlife Federation.
It's a blowhole, Alex, I told him. It's a blowhole.
He didn't listen.
He misunderstood.
He did not listen.
Deliberately, willfully misconstrued what I said.
Awful.
Yeah.
Well, riddle me this. In terms of, it's not misconstruing, but in terms of answering a riddle, I think it's that time, isn't it? We do one once a week, and usually they're a little bit difficult and are quite Anglo-Saxon in nature.
Sorry.
Which is fine. I enjoy those, but they are difficult. And this one, I think, is a lot easier.
Okay.
So if you're a bit of a dipshit like me, this one might actually be for you. So to all you dipshits out there, enjoy. Okay. So the riddle this week is, what word is pronounced the same if you take away four of its five letters? What word is pronounced the same if you take away four of its five letters?
Huh. That is tricky.
Yeah, it's not that easy, actually, is it? It's easy once you know it, like all of these.
Yeah. Well, as people who watch the podcast and listen to the podcast on a podcast platform of their choice will know by now, I'm not good at riddles. I really struggle with these things. So what word sounds the same if you take away four
of its five letters?
Yeah. I'm going to say, Martin, this sounds like an actual riddle, like an actual thing, as opposed to the dreck that Alex comes up with. Like, what's red and hot? Is it fire? No, it's my eyeball. Like, what are you talking about? What is this? What is that?
Sounds like Alan Partridge.
No, Alex's riddle's never that bad, but this actually sounds like a genuine riddle. And
it's a bit of a wordplay.
Wordplay.
A little bit of wordplay with the, you know, it makes sense, doesn't it? The letters. Take away four out of the five letters, and it's pronounced the same.
Okay. So, I think I might have an idea, actually. When you mentioned wordplay, I was like, oh, okay, punning. I think I might have an idea, but I'll save it till the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, if you know, then feel free to drop your thoughts in the comment section at home. Or, of course, if you're watching this on, you know, on repeat or on an audio platform of your choice, then, you know, you can drop us a message with your answer if you so wish. And you can do that in the comment section, of course, but you can also do it via Twitter. I'm at MartInteresting.
I am at AllTimeRobin.
Very good. And, of course, you can also email us. I contact justinteresting@gmail.com if you want to contact us. So please do feel free to do that. Cool. Robin, without further ado, what, sir, have you learnt this week?
Oh, what have I learnt this week? Well, hopefully this will be an interesting thing, because, as you do, I was looking at some old scientific research papers from the 90s. It happened. And there was one from 1997 in the... Was it NIMH, you know, NIMH, the National Library of Medicine?
Okay.
Whatever. Anyway.
whatever. Doesn't matter.
People know what I'm talking about. And it was a study done in 1997 to try to help surgeons who might be dealing with people, particularly children, I guess, who swallowed metallic objects need surgery to extract the item. So it was a study to see how long certain objects could last in the human stomach. So they mixed up some stomach acid.
Yeah.
But obviously, they didn't extract it from a real person, but they know what chemicals go into stomach acid. So they mixed them up with their own. And they tested how long a penny, a battery, you know, one of those flat round batteries, what they'd be called.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ones that go in your watches and things. Mm-hmm. And a razor blade would last in stomach acid. The results were that the penny was completely unaffected. So that would last.
Was it nice and shiny afterwards?
Maybe. They didn't say if it was shiny, but I guess it could be, because acid would clean off the dirt, you'd think.
Yeah, Silabang does it, so probably acid does too.
It probably did. The disc battery was damaged, but it didn't leak, which is good to know.
Good, yeah,
The razor blade, though, could be broken. They were dulled and they were weakened. They'd snap in two in about 15 hours.
So basically, it doesn't matter if you swallow razor blades. It's fine. It will just dissolve in your stomach.
Yeah, I did think twice about using this fact, because I thought, am I going to be implying that it's okay to swallow batteries and razor blades? The answer is no, kids. Don't do it. It's not recommended. But apparently it's not all like the end of the world. I imagine what the real problem from swallowing a razor blade is when it goes down your esophagus, right? Because that's going to be like quite a tight tube, and you've got a sharp razor blade going down there. But once it's in your stomach, it's kind of like sitting there getting dissolved. Yeah, nothing to worry about. Yes, there is probably a lot to worry about. But
tear your stomach open. But, you know, until that time happens, you know, we'll get to that, cross that bridge when we get to it.
What I don't know is what surgeons concluded from this study, as in, What they were saying was, within the first 24 hours, batteries are intact, pennies aren't affected, and razor blades are snapping in two.
So yeah, exactly. What's the action? What's the next step?
What do you do with that information? It's like, oh, so we'll just wait for them to shit it out, I guess.
Quite strange that they went for actual, like, you think that they would go for just the metal and the compounds, right? As opposed to going for actual objects.
Good point.
It's very specific to an object. I imagine they knew the chemical makeup of these. Like, oh, this is 80% aluminium, and that was what they're interested in, as well as it. So, great, razor blades, fine then. Yeah, but there's like a million different types of razor blades. Like, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I didn't ask. What brand razor blade is this? And is it actually? This is one of those sponsored studies. It's a Wilkinson Sword sponsored study. Our razor blades can be swallowed. Or our razor blades can't be swallowed because they will last forever.
Yes.
Don't go to the toilet. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a proper buy it for life item. You do not swallow this razor blade, okay? Whatever you do.
So what did you learn this week, Martin?
Well, I learned a little story, actually. It's a story from a couple of years ago, but it's so good, and I found it recently, that I thought I'd just bring it up. I say it's so good. It's quite interesting. So basically, in China, big place, in a place called Suzhou in the Jiangsu province. I would apologize for my pronunciation, but let's be honest, YouTube's banned in China, so don't have much to apologize about. It's probably fine. this woman was giving away her son to a bride, right, at a wedding.
Oh, okay. I thought you...
She has a son. Her son was marrying this young girl. Ha, 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 lovely, happy day, blah, blah, blah. At the wedding, what she noticed is a birthmark on this girl, on her hand.
Yeah.
She was like, hold on a second. I had a daughter the article doesn't actually say, but I lost as a child, potentially lost and then was trafficked when they were a child, who had a birthmark very, very similar to the one on my son's bride's hand. Whoa. And so she spoke to the parents of this girl and said, right, you have to level with me here. Is your daughter adopted? Have you adopted your daughter? Did you find her? Where did you see her? Blah, blah, blah. I think this might be my daughter. After a fair amount of back and forth, and, the parents quite reluctant to give up this information, and, a bit apprehensive about what might happen, they admitted, like, yes, we adopted her as a young child from this particular region. And it aligned with the mother's story. And so the bride was able to confirm with biological tests that actually she was her long-lost daughter.
No.
And had been picked up on the roadside 20 years earlier. And so, of course, this then calls into question the wedding, right? It's like, you're my daughter, this is my son, you can't get married.
Yeah.
But the wedding went ahead because the mother had adopted the son, and so they weren't biologically related.
What? That's a crazy
twist.
So talk
about that family reunion.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
What are the chances? What are the chances of that happening?
I know, crazy, right?
That is mad.
Yeah.
And then what a happy ending. I'm surprised. This should be a film. This is a great plot for a film.
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it? Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible in the end of the second act, beginning of the third act, the bit where they realize, oh, we're brother and sister.
Yes.
Were they do you know if they were a traditional family in terms of, sexual relations outside of marriage? Were they?
I don't actually know. I'm not sure. But yeah, there would definitely been an element for those who weren't in the know of, like, this is my son. Probably for her parents, actually, her adopted parents were like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This is her son? But no, the son was adopted too, but by the mother. So two sets of adopted children marrying each other. So not biologically related.
Oof.
Yeah.
So the moral of the tale is, I'm not sure.
No, there isn't really one, is there? Just quite a nice story, yeah.
Oh, man, that's terrifying. In China as well, because that's a big place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scope for losing your long-lost child in China. It's amazing that they should come back round and have all the people to pair with.
I know. Yeah. I know. What a crazy story.
Maybe he was, you know, the whole thing about you marry your parents, you know?
Oh, right. Thing? Yeah.
Maybe
he
was like, you remind me of my mum. I like you.
Yeah. Yeah. A bit weird.
A little bit weird, yeah, but wow.
A bit weird, but yes. Yeah. Mad story. Mad story.
Absolutely mad story.
Cool.
Oh, Camera Shy Coco in the comments said, my girlfriend married her brother's father-in-law.
Girlfriend? Oh.
Because
my girlfriend, I'm trying to think. My girlfriend married her brother's father-in-law. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that works. That does make sense, yes. That is legal. That's allowed.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one of those myths. We should check this. Maybe we should do a whole episode about this. But I remember it's one of those things where you're not allowed to marry your cousins, but it's like, it's not actually a rule. It's just a kind of frowned upon thing. I think in the UK, is it legal in the UK or is it illegal in the UK, but actually technically legal in America, but it's frowned upon?
What's this of marrying your...
Marrying your first cousin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you... Oh, I don't know, actually. I think it's legal, isn't it?
I think it might be.
Legal, but it's like, shouldn't be, probably.
Yeah. probably shouldn't be, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Not ideal. No. No.
That's one way of putting it. No. Understatement. Not ideal to marry first cousin. Yeah.
Not ideal. I mean, I don't know if there are any married cousins in our audience, but I'd be surprised. So I'll probably get away with saying not ideal.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
there's no damnation here.
Not judging the quality of the love in that relationship, just the wisdom of doing it biologically.
Well, this is true.
That's the problem there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, C.S. Drumson. My mother divorced my dad and remarried to my dad's first cousin. Oh, okay. And had another son. So my half brother is also my cousin. I see. Wow. Okay, so yeah, so it's not, I mean, it's just marrying your dad's first cousin. Okay, yes. Yeah,
that is allowed.
Interesting dynamic, fine, of course. But
yeah, that's a weird one. My brain is firing off and like, no, that's wrong, but it isn't wrong. That's just weird. A weird coincidence. Yeah. It makes you think twice. I did have a paranoia for a while growing up that I would, because my grandparents had come down from Scotland via Northern England to the Midlands, and then my parents had met in Birmingham and then moved again to where I went to school. So I wasn't born in the place I went to school. Anyway, so because of that movement of family, I did get a bit paranoid that I would meet and fall in love with someone who was actually a cousin, because I had about 11 uncles and aunties who all had dozens of children, and we didn't keep in touch with them.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, what if I...
Always a risk.
What if I meet and fall in love with a cousin? That's going to be weird.
Yeah. In some communities, they have to double check, don't they? Does anyone know? Like, it's not at the wedding, does anyone know a reason? It's at home. Does anyone know a reason why these two... fantastic. Right, shall we move on to some of the, our favourite comments of this week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some great comments in the chat. We've started a really interesting conversation.
Oh, man, there's a lot of, let's just say non-traditional family dynamics.
Yeah.
And
again, nothing wrong with these that are being described, just non-traditional, yeah.
Paranoid Android, that's a good comment. I'm from Iceland, and there's a specific dating app that filters out all relatives due to their small population. I've heard this before, actually.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, quite necessary with a population so small, right?
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. The longer a country like Iceland goes on for, with such a small population, how do they avoid that?
Dating app.
Apparently.
I imagine they probably haven't in the past, and it's caused issues, so... Yeah. Well, obviously there's a need for the app, isn't there?
Yeah. I wonder if... It must be doable in a place like Iceland because of the small population. You can trace relatives quite easily. But when you get to a bigger country, it must get problematic, particularly with Like you get to England and like everyone called Smith. It's like, oh my gosh. Like,
this is a wildfire. It's gone out of control. Well, what comments have you got for us, Robin? Have you got anything that stands out from the last week or so?
Yeah, we've got a couple. I want to respond to a comment made by Driving with Matt, who commented, a YouTube member, who commented on both a YouTube community post and on the video itself, which was exclusive to our Patreons, and it was about the sweet scent of sweat and a study suggests it might be soothing. Almost got the sibilance in there. And Driving with Matt basically said the same thing on both places and said, is there a fetish behind this topic?
I imagine so.
Well, I'd like to respond to Driving with Matt's comment with another question, which is, are you asking if there's a fetish on behalf of Martin or me, or on behalf of the scientists behind the study? Please let us know. Please clarify. What do you mean?
It is weird. Yeah. And if you haven't seen that one, firstly, go over and have a look and interact if you want to. But it is strange, isn't it? These studies of the gathering of sweat and then administering sweat to the participants in the study. It's all just disgusting, but very interesting. Very interesting.
Very fascinating.
But I think it's the physiological reaction, but also I think possibly the associations with just that idea that if you can smell sweat, it's like there's someone else in the room, so it cures that hankering if you're feeling lonely or isolated, perhaps. But anyway, go watch it and let us know what you think, because I'm interested in having lots of opinions on sweat, of course.
Oh, yes. Any comments that stood out to you, Martin?
I've got one from David Gatt, and this was about should we ban TikTok in... Should we ban TikTok?
Yeah.
So the episode about, banning TikTok in the US, and of course the debates in Congress that have been had about privacy concerns with TikTok. Mm-hmm. And David says, everything we have is made in China, our phones, screens, clothes, TVs, etc. What effect does one app do? Should we ban Facebook, as it was proved to be selling information? And that's a good point. I think that, we're in a globalized, interconnected world where, so much is Chinese. And actually, there have been discussions about banning Chinese phones in particular and devices, especially in the US. I know there's issues with Huawei, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was the big one. Yeah.
Privacy concerns. So potentially it's a yes. But I think that's it, isn't it? It's clothes and screens, maybe not TVs, maybe TVs. Some of these things have access to your personal private information that the state could then use. So there's definitely a divide between inanimate objects and those that can actually track your data, I think. In terms of Facebook and selling information, I think there have been calls, at least if it's not, selling it to states, at the very least it's using it in ways in which I think if people knew exactly how it was being used, would be very much against. But of course, no one reads that small print. They just click that they accept the terms and conditions. So, yes. I mean, should we ban social media? That's a big topic at the moment, isn't it? I know some states are pushing towards a ban on, is it anyone under 18 or under 16 from having, just minors in general, having access to social media? I think it's some of the southern, because some of the southern states, no real surprise there. I know Texas were looking at it.
Of course they were. Yeah.
Was it Utah potentially as well, actually? So not southern, but, we're potentially looking at banning social media entirely for a generation. So interesting question. And the answer is possibly, but for a variety of different reasons.
This is such a big topic. I feel we could definitely do a whole episode about it.
Yes. Yes.
It's madness. Madness to think that should be a thing. But hey, we'll see. We'll see. Well, sometimes I'd like to fast forward 100 years and read the history books about our period right now.
Oh.
Just because it's
not going to be looked on favorably.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Like, not many eras of history are looked on favorably, whether it's the way in which society views certain groups, or of course the way it acts in certain times in history. And I think that we feel now that we're kind of on a modern, our values are very modern and in most cases progressive, although there are certain elements of society that are trying to take us back to the Dark Ages. But yeah, I think we're going to look back on this and be quite ashamed of the way in which we've acted. No real surprise there, but even the things that we think are modern and progressive views, Ruben, I imagine at some stage won't be seen as such.
I think you're 100%
right. The way history works, isn't it?
Yes.
It's never static.
And you know, but those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that famous phrase. Yes, and indeed. Speaking of dark periods in our history, Martin, would you like to go on to the main topic of today's podcast and discuss a certain British author's activities during World War II?
I would love to.
Oh, yes, then. Well, before we begin, I just want to ask you a question, Martin, that I should have asked you a while ago. Have you ever asked Jeeves anything?
Oh, I've asked Jeeves lots. I've said, how do I go onto Google? one question. Yeah.
The most asked question on Ask Jeeves.
Yeah.
Is Ask Jeeves even still a thing?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's gone.
If it is, it's more of a kind of a meme site as opposed to anything else, right? Okay, it's just ask.com now.
Oh, they got rid of it. Oh, that's a shame.
Got rid of Jeeves. Yeah. Shame.
I remember using that a lot when I was a kid. It was like, before Google really took off, it was Ask Jeeves.
And it's kind of novel, isn't it? You're like, oh, it's, you know, someone answering for you.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of a personality behind it. Jeeves, the butler. And that was my introduction, actually, by way of segue, to the world of P.G. Wodehouse. Most famous probably today for his creation, Jeeves, the butler. Jeeves and Bertie Wooster.
Oh, yes.
The toffish but very kind-hearted imbecile who's got the brilliant butler, the Machiavellian scheming genius who sets everything right in the world of Bertie Wooster. A humorist and wordsmith was P.G. Wodehouse, famous in the 1930s when his career peaked. Best known, I think, now today for Jeeves and Wooster, but also created some famous characters like Smith with a P.
I don't actually know Smith with a P. I know Jeeves and Wooster well.
Yeah, have you read or watched the series?
I've watched the series with Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry. Mm. It's very good, actually. It's funny. Yeah,
I definitely want to go back and watch it. We were talking about just before we began. I want to go back and watch the rest of it. I didn't finish it, but I've read a few of the books. I've got a few on the shelf behind me, actually, and they're very good adaptations of the source material. Really good. So a bit of biographical information before we get stuck into what happened in World War II. P.G. Wodehouse, real name, full name, I should say, Pelham Grenville Wodehouse.
Yeah, of course. Was he actually Jeeves?
He wasn't. Was born in 1881 in Guildford, which is in southern England, not far outside London, actually. He was the third son of a magistrate who was based in Hong Kong, spent most of his time there. But poor old PG went to boarding school, Dulwich College.
Very nice.
From there, went to work at a bank and wrote stories in his spare time, which fairly quickly, when he was in his early 20s, led to great success. And by the 1930s, he was working in Hollywood. And he had plays on, he had novels, he had film scripts, and he was earning £100,000 a year in the 1930s.
In olden money?
Yeah, so it's like...
What?
£5-6 million a year now?
Yeah, that's a big
madness,
isn't it? Yeah.
Absolute madness. And in all, he published over 90 books, 40 plays, 200 short stories before he died in 1975 at the age of 93.
Fair play. He's kind of worked quite hard, hasn't he? By all accounts.
Yeah.
Plus a little bit of privilege, I imagine, but hey.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I would hope that if I'm earning £5 million a year, I would have the time to write a few novels.
<You know? laughs>
But yeah, he was prolific, and that's hard. It takes talent to be prolific, let's be honest. In 1934, he moved to France from Britain, to avoid taxes.
Yep. Okay.
So, always, let's not judge, but also let's judge. So, he moved to a well-known...
Obviously comes from money as well, Dulwich College.
Exactly.
It's not cheap. It probably wasn't then either. Yeah.
No, he comes from money and liked having money and had so much money that he decided he didn't want to pay taxes. So he moved to France where they had very little taxes, a bit of a tax haven. Along with a whole bunch of other British people who lived in this area of northern France, where they just, if they weren't holidaying, they were living there to avoid taxes. And he was there in France on the 21st of May, 1940, when war happened. German troops with Nazi insignia advanced through northern France. Peter Woodhouse was...
Like idiots.
Woodhouse was married at this time, and they had a dog. No children, just that Edith, I think, was his wife's name.
And what's the dog called? Edith Junior.
I don't know what the dog's name was, actually. So they naturally decided to flee the Nazis coming in. They had been warned beforehand.
Yeah, the Nazis didn't like dogs, it's true.
They hated dogs. That's the only reason they were there, to get the dogs. That's a belittling history, isn't it? Never mind.
They were well-known dog haters. That's what they. If you haven't learned anything about the Nazis, it's that they were well-known dog haters. So, yeah, no, good choice. I think good choice.
So they've missed their chance to go back to Britain with all the other British people who'd fled before them. Mm. So they decided to go to Portugal and fly from Portugal to America. Because, low taxes. That's beside the point. Unfortunately, their car broke down before they could get out of France, and they were caught by the Nazis.
Ah, right. Okay.
This was when they were sent to internment camps. The camps that citizen prisoners from countries like France were sent to were actual prisons. They weren't the other kind of camps that homosexuals, Jews, undesirables, they called them, were sent to. These were actual prisons. And they weren't necessarily pleasant places, but they weren't so bad. For example...
Yeah. You're unlikely to be killed there.
Yeah, unlikely. Yeah. It was crowded. I think he was in a cell that was designed for one person, but there were three other people in it, so it was a bit cramped. But he had time to write a novel. And on the 21st of June, 1941, so about a year into his imprisonment, he was in the middle of playing a game of cricket.
Oh, as you do,
as you do in prison. When members of the Gestapo came along and took him to Berlin. Where he lived for the next few years in the Hotel Adlon, which is like a five-star luxury hotel.
Yeah. What? That doesn't sound like prisoner of war stuff.
It's not too bad. The reason he was there, though, was because he was there at the invitation of the Nazi government, because a man called Werner Plack, who was a Nazi operative who had been in Hollywood before the war, working as a freelance propaganda agent, whose job was to recruit British and Americans to create content for the German propaganda machine.
Ah, okay. I see.
He had the brilliant idea that, hey, this P.G. Woodhouse fella, who's a massively popular and successful author, could do some radio broadcasts. Mm. And we'll broadcast them to the Americans and to the British.
And so Woodhouse was like, fine, I'll do it, but you have to spare my dog.
So I don't know the exact negotiations that he went through, but they did pay him.
Okay.
So they paid him for 5 radio broadcasts, which he delivered. And they were a light-hearted, humorous accounts of his experience as a prisoner of the Nazi regime.
Ah, so was he painting them in a fairly favourable light then?
Well, maybe we can best judge how things came across by the way the British people reacted to these radio broadcasts.
Oh, okay, interesting.
So there was an outrage, and newspapers were swamped with letters from the public calling him a traitor.
Really?
Saying he was offended. And I've got a couple of highlights from his 5 broadcasts. For example, he described French officials as nasty looking. He said, and I quote, "I have acquired a wholesome loathing for Belgians, which is the hallmark of the discriminating man. If I never see anything Belgian again in this world, it will be all right with me."
He forgot about the chocolate.
He did forget about the chocolate, actually. He must have not liked chocolate. He also described the Nazis that he knew as genial, pleasant people.
Oh, come on.
Doesn't sound so great. And he implied that he would be living under the German Reich for many years, if not forever, which kind of suggest that the Nazis are going to win the war, which is exactly what the Nazis wanted him to say. But I should stress, he was given creative freedom. Everything he said in these radio broadcasts, he was allowed to say. He wasn't censored by the Nazis or told or given a script. He just said it himself.
Really? But is that likely?
Well, he never denied it. And we know this because in 2010, some MI5 files were declassified. And these files were their investigation into P.G. Wodehouse's activities with the Nazis. So the story doesn't end there. So he was in Berlin in this fancy hotel, and his wife joined him eventually. And they lived together in this fancy hotel until 1943, when they moved back to Paris. And they were just allowed to. They said, can we go back to Paris? Because we don't like these air raids by the British. They're bombing Berlin. Can we go to Paris, please?
We don't want to be killed.
Yeah. And the Nazis said, yes, you can. So they went and moved to the Hotel Bristol, which is a 5-star hotel in Paris.
There's a theme here.
Yep. And they lived there. The hotel was known for being full of other British traitors, including, for example, someone that P.G. Wodehouse got to know, who was, what's his name?
Right.
I've forgotten his name.
Were they just clubbing together, like a bit of a deal going on here?
A little bit.
You all stay on the hotel and band together and say how good the Nazis are and we won't kill you and your dog.
Well, some of them were actually more, they didn't have to be threatened. So one of their neighbours in the hotel was John Amery, who's the brother of a Tory MP. Hmm. Who was hanged at the end of the war for being a traitor.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Not the kind of circles you want to be in.
Yeah. Hmm. But it turns out that from these declassified MI5 files, it was Amery who suggested to the German Secret Service that Wodehouse might be useful as a propagandist.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
So, man hanged for treachery by the British in 1945 was the one who proposed Wodehouse should do it. Now, I wanted to ask you a question so far.
Okay.
Would you classify him as a traitor from what you've heard?
A traitor. Maybe more of a sympathizer than a traitor. Mm. Because, of course, he's not. I mean, we're talking what year? What were we talking? 1943 now, and he's in Paris.
Yeah, 1943 to 1945.
You're going by how he's been treated, right? Mm. For him, he's been he's been put in a prison for a little bit. Not going to be happy with that, but then. You're free to do as you wish. We're going to pay you lots of money. You can come and go as you like from Berlin to Paris. And let's be honest, you're probably quite unlikely to know about the true extent of the atrocities. All you know is about the hate spewing from Hitler's mouth, but it doesn't affect you directly. Mm-hmm. So sympathizer, yes. Traitor, I think, is quite a strong word, but probably.
Fair enough. Because I only ask because the British people at the time, the BBC even broadcast a radio show with a journalist just ranting and raving and denouncing him as a traitor in response to his radio broadcasts. So the British people were pretty keen on considering him a traitor. So MI5 at the end of the war investigated and they sent someone over to interview him and collect some papers at the end of the war.
And I've changed my mind. He's a filthy traitor.
But they agreed with you though, Martin. They decided that he was unwise rather than treacherous. And
it helps if you have a lot of money.
It does help. And the Director of Public Prosecutions decided that there was no case against him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, by the sounds of it, it sounds like, from his broadcast, it sounds like he was very derogatory towards the French, which I'm sure not too many Brits at the time would have too much complaints about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, does he... He doesn't say that he supports the Nazi regime, and he doesn't denounce the British. Mm. So I'd probably agree. Traitor, I think, is quite a strong word. Although I imagine the sentiment at the time, especially once people started knowing exactly what the Nazis were doing and the fact that he'd supported them, even in word, right, of Actually, they're quite friendly. I can see myself living here for quite some time. I mean, yeah, I'd probably be screaming traitor too if I was in Britain in the 1940s.
And I think he more or less said that. He pled the stupid defense, the ignorance defense. And I'll quote some things he said after the war. He said, "Of course, I ought to have had the sense to see that it was a loony thing to do, to use the German radio, for even the most harmless stuff. But I didn't see it. I suppose prison life saps the intellect." He also said that his radio shows were just reflecting the flippant, cheerful attitude of all British prisoners. And
What?
I never had any intention of assisting the enemy, and I have suffered a great deal of mental pain as the result of
Oh,
my
don't give us
action.
that. Don't give us that. Yeah. Oh, that's the Dana White defense. He's the president of the UFC. I mean, this is completely off topic, but he basically a while ago was like any man that hits a woman is like trash, like worth anything or whatever. And then it turns out on, I think it was New Year's Eve, this Christmas gone, there's footage of him like slapping his wife in a club, and they got into a fight and he slapped
Oh
her.
man,
And
yeah.
then it was very much like, so what's going to happen to you? What kind of punishment are you going to have? Are you going to have to step down from it? Are you going to? He was like, no, like the court of public opinion is against me, and that's something I'm going to have to live with. So that's punishment enough. It's like, yeah,
That's not really
right.
true.
Yeah,
That's not true at all.
I've had to suffer because of the. Yeah. It's the same thing, isn't it? It's just I'm suffering this anguish right now, and that's enough. Yeah.
Well,
Oh dear. Oh
some
dear.
more stuff emerged from the MI5 files, which
Okay.
might change your mind. So, in 1944, the MI5 files reveal that for some reason, Woodhouse's wife was paid £1,500 in monthly installments by the Nazis, which
Oh.
is the equivalent of about £53,000 today. For services rendered, we don't know.
No.
But they did re recover some documents from the German embassy in Paris, which refer to his work for the language section and for his work on propaganda films.
Yeah, right.
And Woodhouse later more admitted to the MI5 in these files that he had sold the rights to a novel he wrote to a German film company during the war.
Okay.
So again, his excuse is, they offered me money, I'm going to take it. It's like the war, mate. I mean, well, I won't quote. But some other comments have emerged since then. Comments he made before the war in the 1930s, and comments he made during the war and after the war.
Okay.
So, just before the war in 1939, he said to a friend, "I can't see what difference it makes. If the Germans wanted to govern the world, why don't we just let them?" After the war, he said, "A curious thing about American books these days is that so many of them are Jewish propaganda."
Oh no, Woodhouse.
He also said, "I always used to think Groucho Marx screamingly funny. I saw him on television the other night, and he was just a middle-aged Jew with no geniality whatever. In fact,
No.
repulsive."
This isn't looking great for you, mate.
And when
I'll be honest.
reflecting on Hollywood, he said, "The trouble is, you see, all these Jews out here have been having a gorgeous time for years, fooling about with the shareholders' money and giving all their relations fat jobs."
Yeah. I mean, there was, I think, around a lot of Europe, there was anti-Jewish sentiment, wasn't there? It wasn't just restricted
Was not
to
unique.
Nazi Germany, especially with certain classes in certain societies. So I don't think that kind of sentiment isn't, yeah, it's not unique or even that surprising.
And not
When,
necessarily, sadly, a Nazi thing, just a
no,
thing,
just
yeah.
racist, anti-Semitic,
Yeah.
yeah. Which isn't it's not better. It doesn't, of course, it doesn't justify it. But
No.
there's a bit of a leap between saying anti-Semitic, horrible, horrible, racist remarks and supporting the extermination of a race, right?
Yeah, you're right. There is, luckily, I guess, but also sadly,
Yeah.
there is a line.
Yeah.
There is a difference. He also, some of the money he had during the war, for some reason, he transferred it to a man called Edward Delaney, who was an anti-Semitic American commentator who worked closely with a man called Father Coughlin, who was a Catholic priest in America, who was known in the 1930s for his tirades against the Jews and support for the Nazi regime. And who broadcast,
this is not good.
Who broadcast Nazi propaganda from Berlin in America.
Oh.
So
it doesn't look good. The optics aren't great on this one, mate.
It's not great, is it? And there's a memo in this MI5 file from 1946, in which an MI5 officer recounts a review of P.G. Wodehouse's case, and the director of public prosecutions said that they now take the view that if Wodehouse ever comes back to the UK, he should be prosecuted.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
I shall clarify. It says, authorities should now bring Wodehouse to trial and leave a jury to decide the question of his guilt or innocence.
Do you think he would have been convicted?
I'm not confident of that, because from 1967 onwards, there was a series of attempts to give him a knighthood, and they were blocked twice until in 1975... weeks before he died, at the age of 93, the Prime Minister intervened to give him a knighthood. So he was knighted.
Was he?
In absentia, just before he died.
Oh man, there's a fine line between being tried as a Nazi and being given a knighthood, isn't there?
Yeah, very fine line, yeah. And now in 2006, 2009, the Queen Elizabeth II approved, and the Dean of Westminster approved, putting a monument to him in Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey.
Interesting.
So,
I mean, a lot of this does go back to, can you separate the artist from the art, right?
Yeah.
There's that question, especially when they're from another era. Obviously, not a great era for humanity was the mid-20th century.
No.
But yeah, I mean, as I say, like, there's... there is a difference between that sentiment and being a Nazi. Should he be commended for his work? Regardless, not, but it happens, doesn't it? Especially with, if you could tear down most statues you could tear down a lot of statues of authors and poets and artists from history if you were going to just look up what their thoughts were on what are now considered sensitive issues, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think he's unique. It's just putting that up in a time where kind of, you know, we should know better and do better. That's the difference, right?
That's a really good point. Can you separate the artist from the art? And there's no denying, I really enjoyed P.G. Wodehouse's works, his books and short stories and the TV series based on them. Yeah. I've really enjoyed them. And I think he is brilliant in his use of the English language and very imaginative. And I wonder if it's just that case of kind of the absent-minded genius, because there's a story from his time in Germany after his radio broadcasts, the newspapers in Britain and, like I said, the BBC, and politicians and people alike were all outraged and calling him all kinds of horrible things, namely a traitor. And there was a German translator working in Berlin at the time, who later, actually, in 1943, got sent to a concentration camp because he was anti-Nazi. This is a good guy we're talking about. Mm-hmm. He's a good German. In the context of World War II, I mean, obviously.
Yes, yeah.
And he was an Anglophile, and he was a big fan of P.G. Wodehouse, and he was a translator, and he spoke English. And somebody came up to him one day and said, there's this British author in this hotel who wants to get a lawyer. You speak English, go and help him. So this German fellow goes up to P.G. Wodehouse and is really excited and says, oh, how can I help? And P.G. Wodehouse says, I want to get a lawyer. Can you find me a German lawyer who can go to England and sue the Daily Express for all these horrible things they're saying about me?
Right.
And, you know, this man's response was, so you want me to get a German lawyer, somehow send them to Britain, with whom we're at war, so they can sue a national newspaper owned by the friend of Winston Churchill, who's prime minister of the country that we're at war with.
So maybe a slight lack of knowledge on the situation.
Apparently, he quoted PG Woodhouse's response as being, "Would that be difficult?"
No.
Yeah.
What?
That was his response.
That can't be true.
So wow. I think that anecdote, which
it sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think it's easy to think that maybe he was just so caught up in his own private Idaho, he just forgot that.
Yeah.
He just completely didn't appreciate the political situation he was in. He clearly didn't understand how badly it would look if he does these radio broadcasts from Berlin. And he's like, I just wanted to do them to say thank you to my American friends for how all their support whilst I'm in prison. And it's like, in prison, you mean in a 5-star hotel whilst being paid by the German government?
Yeah. Robin, thank you so much for bringing that to the table. It is an interesting tale and something slightly different, actually, to what we usually do. It's a narrative, I think. A narrative, a story, less debate. Yeah. Yeah. More of a story, and I quite liked it. A little bit of a change of pace. So thank you. And of course, Woodhouse and Jeeves and Worcester in particular is something that, you know, I watched as a kid. I haven't watched for a while, actually. I don't know. Should I go back now? Is that bad? No, I should.
Yeah,
the TV show wasn't Woodhouse specifically.
I think it's an adaptation, so it's kind of even one more step removed from the author, you know.
Yeah. Yes. I think I will.
We do seem to have a bit of a debate going in the live comment.
Chat. Oh, yeah. What's going on?
Brian Morgan says, too bad we don't have leaders like Churchill and Roosevelt now.
There we go.
And then LW has responded saying, no, Churchill was bad.
But in sarcastic writing. Yeah. Churchill's a very complicated character, which maybe we can get onto at some point.
Yes, I think that's a very deep topic.
Yes. I told you I mentioned it on the podcast, didn't I, that I went to his home.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was good. Worth a visit if you have a chance.
Could you feel his presence?
Oh, yeah. He was there. The ghost of Winston Churchill was roaming the corridors. Yeah. Interesting, though. In his later years, he was massively fat by his clothes.
Yeah. Right, you can tell.
If there wasn't any other takeaways from my visit, was that in his later years, he was massively fat. Yeah.
Wow. So,
there we go.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Massively fat, and he lived in grounds that were quite muddy. So.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah. So that's what I learned from my trip to Winston Churchill's house.
You see, folks, you think the rich and powerful have it easy, but they actually live in mud.
A pig, some would say. Rolling around in his own filth. There we go.
Lovely. So you'd be gratified to know, Martin, I did a little poll in the live chat about who had the best fact this week.
Oh, yeah.
And you won with a decisive 75%.
Oh, you had the best fact by far. It's more of a story.
Oh, it was a great story, though. That's a fact. It was a true story, right? So it counts.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's not an April Fool's joke. It's a true story. So.
Oh, it better not be an April Fool's joke.
That was what I was trying to avoid this time. I was like, if I look at like quite recent news and postings, there's quite a good chance that it's an April Fool's joke. And then they got me onto thinking, like, in this day and age, is there room online for April Fool's jokes? Or is it just like fake news, like probably like half of things online anyway?
Yeah.
There's a final line between fake news and an April Fool's joke. apparently this one is real.
Yeah, I deliberately stayed offline on April Fool's Day. As in serious outlets. Because genuinely, any headline these days, I'm like, yeah, that could happen. That sounds plausible. Is this a joke? No, especially in Britain, it feels like at the moment. Britain and America at the moment is just madness. Every headline, I'm like,
big joke.
Yeah. I feel like 10-year-old me would think this was funny, but no, not now, not anymore.
I know.
So I want to know, Martin.
Yeah,
what's the answer to your riddle? What is
the answer to my riddle? Well, my riddle was, for those who weren't here, what word is pronounced the same way if you take away four of its five letters? And that word is Q.
Q-U-E-U-E-Q.
Take away four letters, it's still Q.
That's very clever, actually.
Yeah.
I like that.
That one was quite good.
Q.
Yeah. Q.
Like James Bond.
Exactly. Yep. Couldn't be done for M, could it? No.
No, there isn't. Yeah, that's not a word. But it might be. If you were to spell M as a word, it would be EM, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But that doesn't work. So no, Q is the answer to that one.
But if you were to spell Q as a word, I'd probably spell it as in the letter Q as a word. I'd probably just stop at the first UE. I wouldn't add the extra.
Yeah, UE. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Seems
it?
A bit Q- a bit unnecessary.
QEU.
Although at the same time, that could be like K. So maybe you do need the extra UE.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
True. Yeah. K. Yeah.
K.
UE. K. Well, then if you pronounce it like that, it would be K-U.
K. K.
K.
K. K. You guys. How are you? Oh, man.
Wonderful. Well, Robin, thank you so much for bringing that one to the table. I thought it was good.
Thank
I
you
really
for listening to me rave on about it. Thank you.
No, and thank you to everyone at home who has been following this this live stream. Really appreciate you being here. Cheers, guys. We're going to head over and we're going to record a Patreon, a little more interesting Patreon. Of course, you can head over there at patreon.com/justinteresting if you would like to. And for the price of about a third of a pint in London these days, you can get all of that good stuff. So if you feel the desire and need to, then do head on over and you can learn about sweat. You can learn about, I mean, what else have we got? I'm going to go through a couple of ones we've done recently. So we've done, can sweat cure your anxiety? We play Would You Rather. That's us three. Me, Alex is there, actually.
Yeah,
Would You Rather. And unfortunately, the Would You Rather got a little bit too real, and that's why he's not here this week. Or whale incident. and then another one where it's just like chilling out with us. I think we were quite tired that day, so we're just like, let's just have a chill with the patrons, chill out, chat.
Yeah, casual.
And then before that was about books being censored. So quite an eclectic mix of different topics for you there if you fancy it. But of course, no obligation. You've probably had enough of us by now.
If you haven't, then please do join our other wonderful Patreon supporters and YouTube members and become a supporter of the channel. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Nice one, Robin.
Thank you, Martin.
Hopefully my nose hasn't been too squeaky this episode. It is quite blocked, so I need to blow my nose. I need to have a drink of water. And then, quite frankly, I need to go to bed.
Yeah.
But thank you, Robin.
You go blow yourself and everyone have a lovely time.
Oh, you weirdo.
Hey. You're
disgustingly dirty. But we need to record a little more interesting as well for Patreon supporters. So we'll do that first.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, see you later. Bye-bye.